Welcome to the Hockey Show on ESPN Chicago. The very latest news and analysis from the NHL and Chicagoland hockey. Brought to you by Chevy Drive Chicago. Now here are your hosts, Barstool Chief and Pat Boyle.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome into the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. Brought to you by Chevy Drive Chicago. Mike Side with the somewhat tardy Barstool Chief.
On time.
Not Belichick time.
Not Coughlin time either.
Ryan Brandel is here. Had the Uber ride from hell. I want to hear about it. I am Pat Boyle. 312-332-3776 is the way to get a hold of us. We've got Bedard, who's challenging for the points lead in the National Hockey League. We've got a team that won three straight on the road at home tonight against Jack Hughes and the Devils. And we've got a lot to get to, but what about this ride? You were stressed.
Picked up at 5:17. I jogged the last two blocks. I was just like, let me out here.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
It was that bad?
It was that bad, and I don't know if people can see on the Twitch stream or what my other place around my camera. I don't like jogging. So it was, I had to hustle, put the jets on. Got here in time. Almost had to run over Waddle in the hallway to get to this seat. So, yeah.
Swim move on him to get by him?
Swim move. He didn't see it coming. That was Western New England Player of the Week right there.
Western New England.
Yeah, that's a big conference. It's a big conference out
right there.
All right. Yep.
So you're here. You're ready to go. You're going to the Hawks game tonight.
I am going to the game tonight. So me and about 14,000 other people.
Maybe more. We'll see. We'll find out.
Ticketmaster had a lot of seats available. We'll say that.
8:52 puck drop because it's game two on TNT. Don't blame the Blackhawks. Blame television.
Yeah.
I usually, you know, follow the money trail, and that's where you go.
We have Biz coming on our show, The Stretch, on Barstool. He'll be on Friday, but we interviewed him earlier today, and I was giving him a hard time about that. Like, you got to talk to somebody. This is, if it's the playoffs, I can understand that, but for a Wednesday night against New Jersey, 8:52 is crazy.
So the problem is the Blackhawks are in the Western Conference. That's the problem.
That is a problem. I won in the Eastern Conference so badly.
You do.
Yeah,
my whole life is planned around that team and the face-off.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as they're in the West, you're going to see start times like this and even later, obviously.
When the NHL expands, inevitably again, I'm rooting for Arizona to get a team. I want Portland, Oregon to get a team. Maybe some other team.
Atlanta, you hear.
You hear that. That's a little too far east. I want expansion in the West.
Okay.
And you
so
push
that they
the
have to
Yeah,
push.
Just for conference balance, push the Hawks to the east.
Connor Bedard is on an 8-game point streak.
Mm-hmm.
He's among the league leaders in points. He's got 25. He did lead the league for like 5 hours on Sunday because it was an early
McKinnon
game.
Yeah, had something to say about that. Yeah,
McKinnon went out and had 5 points and then had like another three or four last night. So
yeah, he's pretty good.
I don't know how you're going to stop that freight train that is the Colorado Avalanche. They only have one regulation loss so far this year.
They're humming along.
And so like if they're not they're usually leading, and if it is a tight game, he's going to get an empty netter. So it's like, I don't know how you're going to catch McKinnon, but it's just cool. A month into the season, to see a team that's in the playoff hunt, which we didn't expect.
Nope.
And 98 playing like the player that many expected to see when he was drafted number one overall in 2023.
Biz threw around the word generational again. Haven't heard that basically since maybe his first month or two in the league. And he has started that conversation himself. He decided he was going to be a different player. You know, I thought, I've seen other people make this point, but Biz said it as well, that, you know, he's a naturally fiery guy, you know, he's a competitive guy.
Yes.
But maybe that wasn't always directed in the right way and not harnessed in the right way. And now you're seeing it out on the ice where he's getting into a dust up basically every game. He's not taking any cheap shots, any lip from anybody, and he's playing good hard hockey, and that speed allows him to be a dog on loose pucks and create turnovers. That goal against Calgary, I think we talked about it last week too, but picks a guy's pocket and goes in. Like he is a completely different player, and he does look like, you know, we would talk on this show last year, like, what's the ceiling for this team if Bedard is, you know, run of the mill all star, you know, meaning 90 points a year. you know, you trade offense or defense, that kind of thing. And it's like, well, they'll make the playoffs. They got a lot of prospects coming. They'll be a playoff team eventually. Now, like, the conversation's back where you want it to be, where you think that you can start dreaming eventually as all these prospects come and Bedard and Nazar and all these guys take that next step, that they maybe they could be a cup team again in, you know, 3-4 years.
So when we watched him his rookie year, he was great. Mm-hmm. I you know, look, he won rookie of the year. It's not like they hand that trophy out if you suck. He was good.
Basically on a point per game.
Yeah, it was 63 and he
played 68
and
or something.
And he played like 68 games. So close to a point per game player on a bad team.
Yeah.
But we talked about what we saw last year. They call it coaching the juniors out of somebody. Mm-hmm. Now, he was in the WHL in Regina, and he, you know, lit up that league and did everything he could. I mean, they weren't a great team.
No.
And, you know, he gets to the National Hockey League after all the fanfare of the World Juniors and leading Team Canada and winning and scoring with the golden goal, right, in overtime, did the heartbreak celly, Kane's heartbreak celly. He came here, and second season, I felt there were too many hero plays, trying to do everything on his own, wouldn't dump the puck in, didn't see a lot of working away from the puck on the defensive side.
Yeah,
completely different player this year.
Yeah.
And the faceoffs, which we questioned whether or not long-term fit was going to be center. Chief, since the last 12 or 13 games of the season, he's over 50%.
Yeah. So I would have settled for 45 for a guy like him. And it's the other things, too. It's like, you know, his ability to play down low and get the puck and carry it out and carry it out of trouble. And, you know, because he's such a high IQ player. And this year we're really seeing him present that side of his game in the defensive zone, too, where it's like he knows where the outlets are. He knows where the little safety, you know, he can curl away from pressure and find, you know, an open breakout guy instead of just necessarily trying to skate through everybody. It's like he's making all the simple little plays. And I'm so glad he's getting rewarded with points because I've always been a big believer that, you know, if you have the good habits, and we've been preaching on this show for years, like, so we don't care about the results. We just want to see the good habits. Now the good habits are leading to that production. So it's like it's all coming together all at once. And it's so exciting to see, to watch.
It's been fantastic. He is leading by example.
Yes.
What he says off the ice sounds like a future captain to me.
Yeah.
And I can't believe the transformation, to be quite honest with you. If you said to me between April and September, he's going to get faster, the shot's going to get better, he's going to work away, he's going to have that dog mentality, he's going to not back down from any extracurricular activity on the ice.
Yeah.
I would have been like, you're asking for too much, Pat. You know, there's just no way someone's going to make that. And check every box.
Yeah.
And this isn't like one shift you see this on or one period. It's been every freaking game this year.
No shifts off. And did you watch that The Last Dance?
Yes.
With Michael Jordan?
Yes, of course.
And every episode, Jordan had like a new villain.
Yeah.
You know, some guy who had some perceived slight where Jordan was like, I took that personally.
Yeah.
I wonder if, you know, last year where the team's in last and people are questioning his ceiling and, you know, Biz is calling him out, Messier's calling him out, Roenick's calling him out, Barstool Chief's calling him out, that if he had, like, and who's maybe some of his own teammates, too, and then you hear that, oh, Celebrini's better, Celebrini's more well-rounded. I wonder if he went back and he took that personally. And he's like, you know what? I'm going to reevaluate the way I do everything here. I know I can do it in this league, and so I'm going to change the way I train. I'm going to change the way I play. I'm not going to let these guys push me around out there. And he has... It feels like he's grown 5 years in 5 months.
It absolutely has. And now you see him and Celebrini atop the points list.
And Leo Carlson.
The league is in great shape right now with young superstars that are playing at a high level.
The kid Schaefer with the Islanders at 18 as a defenseman is, I mean, Cale Makar came in. I think he did 2 years at UMass and came in for that playoff run. It was instantly awesome, but he was also 20. Schaefer doing it at 18 is crazy. So you're right. There's a ton of young talent taking over the league.
And it's catching the eye of Team Canada. We thought Macklin Celebrini had the 14th forward spot locked up for many reasons. Plays great, yep. Bigger, plays both 200-foot game. And I just didn't think Bedard would have all those tools in his toolbox at the start of year three, considering what I saw in the first 2 years. Oh, yeah, he's got the tools, and he's putting up the numbers. And all of a sudden, he's not a liability to put on there because of his points. He's working great away from the puck and defending at a high, high rate.
Yeah. Now, this is Team Canada.
Yeah.
Where I've seen projections where it's like your first line center is McDavid. Obviously, McDavid's ahead of Bedard. And then it's Nate MacKinnon. He's ahead. Then your third line center is Sidney Crosby.
Yeah, no,
And then there's Nick Suzuki. There's lots of guys out there competing for those center spots. And I, you know, the tie kind of goes to the veteran, I feel like, in a lot of situations like that, especially since the last two Olympics, we didn't have NHL players allowed to play. So I feel like there's a lot of guys who want that bite at the apple before their career's done. I think it's still as great as he has been. We said a couple weeks ago, I think, that if Bedard wants to make that team, he has to be undeniable.
Well, and there have to be some injuries.
And there might have to be some injuries, but he has forced that conversation.
He has
been undeniably fantastic. Where when it was talked about last year for Four Nations, it felt like, what are you talking about? Like, he doesn't belong anywhere near that team.
No.
Now he does. And
Doug Armstrong said so this week. So he's the GM of Team Canada. He said both Bedard and Celebrini got our attention. And, and he also went on to say he has the attention of players on Team Canada, coaches on Team Canada. So everybody, it's good for the sport, for the NHL, that you know, the number one overall player from 2023, the number one overall player from 2024 are as advertised.
Yeah, it's
or maybe better than advertised.
It kind of, you know, I always refer to like the golden generation. I think there's probably some bias inherently with me because the Hawks were so good, but the play was so good, and there's still a lot of toughness. It was really that 07, 08 Wings, Penguins to the next set of Penguins Cups. Like that 07 to call it 2018. That to me was like the best hockey with these great teams and stars, and it was driven by Sid and Ovechkin coming in the league. I wonder if we're on the precipice of something similar to that with Bedard and Celebrini, where they seem like they're good friends and buddies, and they have like the, you know, Bedard had a nice comment about him, like, I get fired up when I see him score, like, I'm so happy for him. But it does kind of feel like there's a manufactured rivalry by the media between Celebrini and Bedard. I'm here for it.
And let me tell you, they're tight.
Yeah, they're both Vancouver kids, right?
We know Celebrini's dad with the Golden State Warriors, and so he's got a really interesting background. But they bonded a lot over the summer and got to know each other pretty well. And Bedard said, like, look, I know people want to see, like, this rivalry. He goes, I'm excited when he has a big night because he's a good buddy of mine. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean,
I'll be very curious what that manifests itself when they play each other.
We'll
because
see.
Now it's like Bedard might, he's got that bite to him now. So I wonder if, like, once it's like the old Jordan, again, like Jordan, where Jordan would turn into an animal. It didn't matter if you're on the dream team with him and you're his best friend, Charles Barkley. He wanted to kill you. Right. And I wonder if Bedard will have that too.
I don't think anybody will have one.
Not quite Jordan. He's a psycho.
Jordan, yeah. I mean. let's go to the phone lines real quick. Tom in New Jersey, you're up first on the Hockey Show. How you doing tonight, Tom?
Happy Wednesday, boys. Greetings from the Jersey Shore. And
exit 98, baby.
Exit 98 on the parkway, not the turnpike. You guys are always welcome. How appropriate Hawks are playing my second favorite team tonight from New Jersey. I'm looking forward to it, albeit a late start. I have kind of a multi-point or multi-question tonight regarding makeup of lines, like on the offensive side. And then if you have time, I think I have a great trivia question for you. So when the Hawks are putting together their center and wings, obviously there's a checking line, there's a scoring line, but when they're putting certain wings with centers, what are they looking for? And then why don't we have any more names of lines? Like when I was growing up in the 60s, we had the Million Dollar Babies. We had the Scooter line for the Hawks. And if you do have time for the trivia question, the Hawks Million Dollar Baby line was one of the first I grew up with. I'm sure you knew who the three original players were. When Murray Balfour retired or whatever, who replaced him? And guys, I really love the show. Let's go Hawks tonight, and I appreciate your time.
All right, Tom, thanks for...
Tom's got me stumped.
He's
before my time, for sure.
Yeah,
I'm sure it was Hole Makita, maybe somebody else. I don't know.
Yeah, I'll have to dig in on that.
When I was a kid, the only line that I remember from when I was a kid was the Flyers, when they had Lindros, LeClaire, and Michael Renberg were the Legion of Boom. Legion of Doom, rather.
Right.
And that was like a fun, cool thing. I just feel like guys don't stay on a line together very much anymore. You know, like it's less rigid. There's the old Quenville used to put them in the blender. Hawks had the hustle and flow line with Kane, Shaw, and Sod on one of those runs. But yeah, it's not really.
When we played LA, they had that 70s line.
Yeah, because who was that? It would have been Jeff Carter.
Tyler Toffoli,
and somebody else. But yeah, to your point, they just don't really name them. Blame the media for that one. They got to come up with better names for that.
At Michigan, the CCM line was a good one.
Yeah. Then you had, what was the North Dakota one with the dot line, which was Duncan, Oshie, and Taves.
Okay.
That was a good one too. But yeah, it just hasn't really been a thing, I feel like, in the culture the last couple of years.
I don't think lines stay together as long as
line
they
them
used
up.
To.
Yeah.
We'll get more into tonight's lineup. There's some guys that are questionable. Nazar's not going to play. Barakovsky's a game-time decision. So
yeah, and they called up Slaggart because of that. So
we'll see.
Probably out.
More on that. I also want to ask you, we were talking about Celebrini and Bedard hitting, and why do you think in the NHL the draft order plays out on the ice compared to other leagues? Like, there don't seem to be many busts, so to speak, highly touted. You know what I mean? Well,
yeah.
We'll get into it. Mm-hmm. It's 312-332-3776. It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Across here, Bedard with a shot. He scores! What a shot by Connor Bedard! It's a power play goal, and it's 3-0 Hawks.
Chance to bring it out. Connor Bedard skates the puck in, Bedard with a shot. He scores! Connor Bedard! Coast to coast puts it in, second of the night. There's a shot there. Oh, he scores! A hat trick goal for Connor Bedard! And here come the Hats! Lost check by Bedard. He's got a breakaway. Bedard scores! What a goal by Connor Bedard! His fourth point of the game! And it's 4-0 Hawks!
He's got the puck now. Bedard with a shot. Scores! Connor Bedard!
Oh my goodness, what a shot by number 98 to make it 1-0 Hawks 59 seconds into the game. Are you kidding me?
Connor Bedard has been everything and then some for the Chicago Blackhawks to start his third season. He's averaging over 2 points per game during his 8-game point streak. He's matched a career high with an active 3-game goal streak as he goes back into action tonight against the New Jersey Devils at the United Center. If you're on your way there, give us a call, 312-332-3776. Bedard has factored in, Chief, on 47.1% of the team's goals this season, the second highest percentage in the NHL behind Macklin Celebrini.
Ball dominant. That's like Kobe Bryant numbers. So it's like everything goes through him, and he's producing, so it works.
Jeff Blashill was on Spittin' Chiclets this week, and I don't know if we've given Blash enough love for, how he's got this team to play, creating the culture, getting the systems down. But and I'm going to give Bedard most of the credit for the transformation. But, the question is, what role did Blashill have in the switch being turned?
Yeah, I also think that a lot of that was internal, but your coach has to put you in the position to have success, and he's certainly done that. He's trusted him in big spots and kind of seems like he's given him some freedom, too, within that structure. And, I really do think Blashill is the right guy for the right time. I saw people hating on that hire when it was made, just they remember him from Detroit and
I think that's what they...
What a dumpster fire that was, but that was hardly his fault.
No.
But this is a guy who's coached junior, he's coached college, he's coached in the AHL,
He's coached for a long time in the NHL. Then he was an assistant under Cooper.
Gold standard with arguably the best coach in the league or one of the, and yeah. John Cooper. Some Hall of Fame players in Kucherov.
Mm-hmm. Datsyuk, Zetterberg.
Like,
he had Mo Sider.
He has the resume.
Yeah.
Resume. And we didn't have, since Quenneville left, every coach that took over did not have head coaching experience in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, and look at it. They were certainly flirting heavily with Carl out in Denver. And I think, you know, and I'm sure he'll be a great coach someday. He's a great college coach. But I was always a little leery of having a guy with a ton of players playing in the NHL for the first time and also learning how to be an NHL coach for the first time. That just never seemed like the right fit for me, as great as Carl might be someday. Blashill has... He has a diesel resume, and he's the ability that he can reference coaching Kucherov and Datsyuk and Zetterberg, and he's learned different things. And now he's like, he's a teacher, I think, at heart.
Yeah.
And he's got the right group of guys to teach, and he lets them have fun, and he's creating that culture of accountability, and they all kind of stand up for each other. And that's got to, you know, the coach is a big part of that. So he's done a great job.
So, again, he's on Spit and Chicklets this week. Witt asked Blashill about Bedard's development and what role did Blashill play in that.
An article about your team and about how things are going right now, and you were talking about Bedard and mentioning just his, how good of a teammate he's been and his attitude. I think your quote was like winning hockey mentality. And last year, I could say Biz and I maybe questioned it a little bit. Some body language things, some frustrations. You come in, things look different. Was that something that you and him addressed maybe, or is that just something that he maybe grew up a little bit more this summer?
Well, I mean, you know, the first thing I say, like you guys were just talking about it, about how hard it is to be young in this league. And sometimes you got to let, you know, for him, he's had to kind of do it under like a spotlight probably not seen before, you know, for those yep. first 2 years. Now, I wasn't there, so I can't comment on anything prior to me being here. All I know is when I got the job, you know, one of the things I did, I actually ended up going out and meeting with him in Van. And honestly, we had a great dinner. We talked for a long time, and I was really impressed with you know, where he was at as a young guy. Like, you know, he kind of, some of the reflections that he made over the court, you know, I talked to him about, you know, the previous couple of years and things that had gone well and things that he didn't, and he admitted there was things that, you know, he thought he could do better in terms of just approach and stuff like that. Nothing big, but I just thought it was real introspective, and you know, so I thought it was awesome. The biggest thing I've, you know, kind of said to him since we got going this summer was, at the end of the day, the best cultures in the league, the best players play great hockey. They play winning hockey. You go through, you know, I was fortunate enough to coach Datsyuk and Zetterberg. You go through that whole thing in Detroit, you know, think of Boston, Tampa, where I was, Florida. All these teams, the best players play winning hockey. And so, you know, that's kind of been my challenge to all these young guys. And Connor's been awesome about it. Like, he you know, again, his game isn't, nobody's game's perfect. But man, is he trying to do it the right way. And because of that, I think he's getting rewarded with lots of points. And also, we're winning games.
One of the big things that Blashill took away from his time in Tampa was how Cooper let his staff run some practices, mm-hmm. run some meetings. He delegated. And he felt his job, Cooper's job, was to be a strong communicator with all his players. And you can't be doing that if you're worried about the game plan here. Yeah,
the minutia.
And so that's something he has tweaked since his time in Detroit, picked it up in Tampa, and is implementing it here. And I think you can tell by the coaching staff he has. He's got the guys that he feels comfortable with, and they've got skins on the wall, and they're able to, you know, get these opportunities to take things over that maybe on other teams the head coach is doing. And it's allowing him to have the kind of communication mm-hmm. that he has with Connor Bedard. And I think going to Vancouver when you're just named to go meet your star player,
yeah.
I can't even begin to tell you how important I think that probably is to Connor to see that initially.
Well, and I think it's about developing trust too,
yeah.
where it's like, hey, you know, we're in this together, and like, let's talk this out. And that introspection from Connor, you know, if he's seeing that right away while he's, you know, changing his training and doing all that, I think that's a wonderful thing. And then, you know, he later in that podcast, he referenced, you know, that Connor, he has physical tools and he's improved some of those, the speed and whatever, but he really wins with his brain. And he's like, Kucherov was a lot like that. So it's like being able to like, hey, look at what Kucherov does here. Or this is, you know, change angles on defenders here, set them up for screens this way or that way. And just reading the game different and letting Connor like really play to his strengths. And then Connor has taken that and then really added some of this. I think the quickness, that short area quickness, and then that long range speed, they've both looked so much better. He's always had the great edges and the great shot. But I feel like his shot, he's getting it off a little bit quicker and he's getting it off from more dangerous areas and you're seeing the results. And then that kind of, he's been shooting the puck more. And I feel like that's opening up lanes too, because people are so fearful of that shot. And it's been beautiful hockey to watch this year.
It's been great to see Andrei Burakovsky also play a role in that. I want to get into that. The Tyler Bertuzzi effect will set the table for tonight's game against the Devils. Chief is going to go. I know Tyler Aki and some of his crew are heading to the United Center.
Frank the Tank is going to be there.
Really?
Yeah, Frank the Tank.
All right, so we'll get into it. 312-332-3776. It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.
This is ESPN Chicago, WNVP, WTBC, HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
The Hockey Show with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
On the AM.
At 1000.
On the FM.
At 100.3 HD2.
On your phone.
Through the ESPN Chicago app.
It's the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000 with Barstool Chief. I am Pat Boyle. The Hockey Show is brought to you by Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Chevy drives Chicago. Blackhawks in action at the United Center. Late tilt, 8:52. You will be there along with the Blackhawks faithful. Mm-hmm. And hey, look, they won three straight on the road, including a game against Detroit on Sunday.
Pumped them. 5-1.
Dominated
them. Yeah. Detroit played pretty well that game. They have gotten great goaltending. That save that Soderblom made against Dylan Larkin on the 2-on-1
was
one of the saves of the year. So that kind of, you know, that goal goes in, it makes it 2-2. You don't know where you end up, but they have Spencer Knight and Soderblom have both been very, very good.
Spencer Knight leads all goalies with a 12.6 goals saved above average. And the Hawks are third in the NHL with a 2.50 goals allowed per game. So that goes into...
People might say that's due for a correction. I think the correction is that they'll learn how to play a little defense better, because they're giving up, I think, the third most high danger chances
new
in the NHL.
New system, too, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, the
new system for everyone.
Right.
So not just the young
new
guys.
New PK.
Mm-hmm. So I think, and look, this is another thing we were calling for last year, put Bedard on the right side of the power play.
And that has helped. Burakovsky on the left flank, Bedard on the right, and Levshinov quarterbacking has produced a lot over this 8-game
How about this for a little
streak for
a little stat
Bedard.
For you? A little snack stat, we'll call it. Do you know how many assists Demidov has for Montreal?
12?
9.
Wow.
Do you know how many Levshinov has? 9. So, look, that was like a big debate. People are still irate. I think both guys are going to end up being really good players. But you know, you need top four defensemen. They're hard to find. So getting Lev going has been pretty good too.
Let's go to the phone lines. Mark, we saw him at Bourbon and Bacon last week. Mark, welcome back to the show. How you doing?
Thanks for taking my call, Pat and Chief. Happy Wednesday night.
Happy
Wednesday.
Thanks
for calling.
Pat, it was great catching up with you at that CF event. That was fun.
It's my first time there. That's a great event, what a perfect venue at Binney's in Lincoln Park.
Yeah, great event, great cause. And Chief, I didn't realize your brother-in-law was a mutual friend of ours.
Which one?
That's a small world. KD. I'm just going to use his initials.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, known him forever.
Okay.
Anyway, you guys brought up, you really haven't touched on the subject yet, but you were going to, about why first round drafts aren't a bust and pretty much a sure thing. I got a lot of thoughts on that in hockey versus football and baseball. In hockey, there's just so much data on these guys. There's so many, they play hundreds of games before they get to where they're going to be. In college, you may play 10 or 20 games, and the NFL has got to make a decision on you coming out of college. And in baseball, none of those hitters have ever faced a major league pitcher. Mm-hmm. But these hockey players, because they're always at the same level, you're always taking that guy that is the guy, the cream of the crop, and he moves up to the next level.
Yeah, but you're also judging a 17-year-old, and their body's not developed. So, like, you've got more data points, but you've got them at a younger age playing inferior talent. So,
yeah, I don't know. I think hockey has hit, but you're right, where it's like, how do you – this goes back to the Demidov-Levchinov debate. Like, no one could even see that guy playing in Russia because of the status of the world.
With the defensemen, remember, they'll roll them into AHL mm-hmm. to develop them a little bit longer than the forwards. But, Pat, those 17-year-old, like, a guy like Kane, Sidney Crosby, Sidney at, what, 13, 14 was playing with 18, 19-year-olds? You can see that. And when those guys come out as the ones, the league knows it.
Kane's draft year, Mark, he was projected to be a fourth-round pick until, you know.
World Jays, I think he exploded.
And he changed the trajectory of everything. So, I think
he had 154 points that year, too. That helps.
His speed was so much faster than Connor's. Now, as you and I talked about, Pat, Connor really, really did work on his game. His game is night and day from what it was before. Now, his shot is electric, right? But he put the work in. Patrick Kane was just... he was just so much fat. I guess my point is the true ones, the superstars like that, they can see that the scouts can see it.
Yeah.
All right, Mark.
Much more so than the defenseman is what I was trying to say.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mark. Appreciate it.
Yep.
I think the hits a first round pick, like when you see stats like in the Western Conference Finals, combined on both teams, there's 22 first-round picks. Mm-hmm. Like, that kind of, that surprises me to a degree. Like, there's that many hits.
Yeah, it's like an 80% hit rate in the first round, then the second round, it's like, and by hit rate, it's just like games played. Like, did this guy play like 300 games or something like that at the NHL? Or
do they get another contract with that team?
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know. That it is, hockey does seem to, and you always hear like, oh, there's the top 20, and then there's like, the guys in the 20 to 50 range are all kind of interchangeable. So you're just looking for that diamond in the rough. And then we've seen like that Matthew Nyes draft where he went in the second round. But that was a COVID year where they didn't have as much of a sample size.
Sure.
So I think there were a few guys in that draft who probably fell more than they should because there just wasn't enough games to properly scout.
Our Twitch and YouTube stream is brought to you by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado, J.D. Power's most dependable large light-duty pickup. Right now, during Chevy Red Tag, get 0% APR financing on 26 Chevy Silverado 1500 pickup. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Chevy Silverado, the official truck of the Chicago Bears. Let's go back to the phone lines. Rick joins the show. Rick, how you doing tonight?
Hey, guys. Doing well. Great show. Thank you for having me on. I was just wanting to touch on what your thoughts were for the possibility. I know there were talks of Bedard, you know, maybe moving to wing, and then on Spittin' Chiclets, the coach kind of shut that down. But I was just thinking maybe it would be a positive move for him, but wanted to hear your thoughts.
All right, Rick, thanks for the call. I think, you know, one of the big questions is defensive responsibility. There's more responsibility at the center position.
Mm-hmm.
He has picked up in that area dramatically. We talked about puck battles won. He was 179th a year ago. He's top 10 this year.
Yeah.
That's not that's not a jump.
It's an attitude.
It is.
Yeah.
And then the faceoffs. Mm-hmm. You can't really have a top line centerman who's in the 38%
area.
Yeah,
you just don't want to be chasing the puck that much. You know,
right.
So
it's almost like a turnover.
Yeah.
And he is improved in that area drastically.
He certainly has. And, you know, to the caller's point and to Blashill's point, I think I kind of said it earlier, you know, we'll see. You know, it's just about getting your best guys together and guys who have chemistry. So you look at Kantsarov, who's ripping up the KHL.
Frondell's off to a great start. Kancerov's definitely going to be a wing. Frondell, I don't think they know. Like, he might be the right type of power forward type who can win pucks down low, shield pucks, occupy defenders, and create space for Connor. And just, he's got a bomb of a shot too. So can he find the little dead spaces and have Connor set him up? And it just, I don't know if it, Connor has improved so much defensively that I don't think it matters right now. And it's not something that they were going to run this experiment at him at center the whole year regardless. And him being very competent in that role both ends of the ice just gives them more flexibility. So if he ends up at a wing, maybe he will someday. I'm no longer concerned with that question, I guess.
You told me in the break that there was, let's say, a former NHL player that played on a top line in the National Hockey League with an elite, elite talent. And he thinks that Connor is an absolutely bona fide center.
Yeah,
long-term.
And the way that he carries the puck and transports the puck through the neutral zone, too, so he can be that guy who gets the puck down low and really assists in your breakout, and his zone entries are great. So you want him coming through the middle with a puck on his stick just to establish possession. And then if you are doing a little chip and chase, as every team has to at certain points, it just, once you're in the offensive zone, it's F1, F2, F3. It is kind of like positionless in the offensive zone. So if he's doing the defensive side correctly, you know, then the offense kind of takes care of itself. So I think he's really, his improvement has just drastically changed the outlook of this organization, where it's like you were looking at Nazar, well, is he better as a center or a wing? And then you have Frondell, is he better as a, and Bedard's in the same question. Do you have to go out and trade for one? Now it's like, well, you know, or Sacha Bulvera, can he be one of those guys? It's like get your best 12 forwards in the lineup, and because you're having a couple of guys with Nazar, and I am biased towards bigger, more physical centers because that's what always wins in the playoffs. But if they're doing the job, they're doing the job. So they're in a good spot with that question.
By the way, you know, not only are our players that are coming up to the National Hockey League prospects and performing at a high level, it's seemingly at every level that the Hawks have drafted and currently have their prospects. Just giving you a couple right now. Nick Lardis in Rockford, 13 points in 13 games, 5 goals, 8 assists. Korchinski, 10 assists in 12 games this year. You mentioned Sacha Boisvert at Boston University. He's got 9 points in 8 games.
Yeah, so he's heating up a little bit now, too.
Frondell has 12 points in 17 games in the KHL.
In the SHL. He's on
in the
pace.
SHL, my bad.
Yeah, the Swedish.
Kancerov has got 29 points in 26 games in the KHL.
I don't know if this is still the case, but it's definitely the case like a week or so ago. Frondell is pacing to have the greatest production season by a player of his age in the SHL ever.
Wow.
So, yeah, things are looking good, we'll say. We'll Shout out Kyle Davidson and all his scouts.
And the scouting staff. They've been fantastic. All right, we'll put a bow on this show, go back to the phone lines when the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000 continues.
The Hockey Show
with Pat Boyle and Barstool Chief.
Call us or tweet your comments to at ESPN 1000, The Hockey Show.
This is Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago.
Back on The Hockey Show on ESPN 1000, brought to you by Chevy Drive Chicago. Thanks to our producer, Jack McGrath. Did a great job tonight. Thank you, Jack. And we talked a little bit about Bertuzzi. Got a goal in all three of the Blackhawks' 3 straight road wins here as they come back to the United Center. And if you're looking for a prop for tonight, he's got 23 points in 19 career games against the Devils, 10 goals and 13 assists.
He's talked me into it.
He's got that back post. He makes it look so easy on the man advantage.
Yeah,
it's really not.
He's looking like he's giving me Zach Hyman and Edmonton vibes with McDavid, where he just stands there and waits for somebody to bounce the puck off of him. So he's like a human shovel over there. So it's great. You know, you're getting production. He's playing very well. And, you know, he's a Blashill guy. You know, he's a guy that was Blash had him in Grand Rapids. He had him early in his career in Detroit. That's when he had his most success. He was an important part of that team. And he's, you know, tough kid, goes to the hard areas, and I think he makes life on his teammates and the other skill guys a lot easier.
He's been fantastic, mm-hmm. and
I think he's healthy now too.
Yeah, and I think Blash will push the right buttons.
I think
as
so
well.
Too.
All right, let's go back to the phone lines. Elliot joins us next. He's in Elgin. How you doing tonight, Elliot?
Very well, thanks, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
So if Jordan Kyrou is, in fact, on the trade market, would you entertain bringing him in, and what would you be willing to part with? Thank you much.
All right, thanks, Elliot. Your thoughts on Jordan Kyrou?
What are your thoughts on Jordan Kyrou? I'm not the biggest fan. I don't know that he is the right fit, the right attitude. They've got such a good thing rolling here. He does make sense from a contract standpoint because I think he's signed for, you know, 7 or 8 for the next several years.
Yeah.
The Hawks are going to have some work to do to get up to that cap floor next year. But I still think it's early to add a player like that to this group where you have all these prospects coming. You also don't, you know, you don't want to block some of these guys either.
That's my biggest my biggest issue. Like I can't wait till Nick Lardis gets called up. Yeah. I think he's a goal scorer, Chief. At every level, he's a goal scorer. And just watching him at Fifth Third Arena during prospects camp and training camp, he would find the back of the net all the time. And I'm just like, when you sit there and watch mm-hmm. drill after drill after drill, scrimmage after scrimmage, and he is constantly lighting the lamp, you're like, all right, just – there's some people that are just gifted goal scorers. I think he's going to be one of them.
And he can skate, too. So he fits that Davidson model. And it's, you know, he's doing it at the AHL level, which is great to see as a young player.
I like what Oliver Moore has shown us thus far since he was called up.
He might have a little bit more offense than people were suspecting, too, because he was just asked to do so many different things at World Juniors and in Minnesota. So maybe he's a top six wing, too. Like, you just don't know. Like, they have so many guys who...
Kantsarov is going to probably come over to North America at the end of this KHL season. Mm-hmm. We had Frank Saravalli on. So I don't know if he could end up playing kind of like the NCAA kids do after the Frozen Four play, or like Slagger played like the last month and a half of the season. Yep. So we could see him, and I think we're going to see Frondell probably come over to North America next year.
Yeah. So, and that's, you know, and they got, like we mentioned, Beauvais. They have so many guys that you want to, you don't want to, you hate to give up on one of these kids, you know, like to trade him for an established player at this point because Davidson just keeps turning up aces. So you'd hate to get rid of the wrong guys, and they have so many more coming. Like Vaneker's killing it in the OHL right now too, so he's probably, you know, a guy who's going to need some time in the minor leagues. But you just never know. So they're in a great spot, and it's like it is still so early in this rebuild. Kyrou's not the guy that I would give up assets for because they have guys that can score. And he is more of a, I know he's listed as a center, but he plays more as a wing. He's not like a great defensive guy. I would just stay the course at this point.
We talked a little bit last week about the number that Connor Bedard is eventually going to sign for. With all these signings that are going on, mm-hmm. like Leo Carlson is
up
next, mm-hmm. right? It seems like if you're the Blackhawks, you want to get the Bedard deal done sooner rather than later because the price is just going to keep going up.
Yeah, it is, and the cap's going to keep going up too. I would be more concerned about the term of the contract than the AAV at this point. So if I were Connor, I would sign a 3 or a 5 or something like that, kind of do the Austin Matthews map where he never signed that full 8-year deal that he's eligible for. If the Hawks can get Connor to sign at 8 years for 12 or 13 million, I think by the end of that he's going to be, by the end of that he'll be what, 28? I think that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, so they'll still be in a pretty good spot. They have so much cap room. They have so much coming off the books right now too, with between Shea Weber's deal and who's the goalie from Winnipeg, his deal is up, Dickinson's up, Mikheyev's up, you know, and you might bring back some of these guys. You're going to have to
Foligno's up.
So you know, Teravainen will be up before you know it, and Bertuzzi will be up before you know it. And that's where you hope, like, the Vanekers and Lardises kind of take their jobs, kind of, which is kind of cutthroat because they've been good soldiers here, but that's what you're hoping for. And you just want to have, they're going to have, they have plenty of money. Like money is not a concern. It's more of a concern 5 years from now when you have to pay all of these guys and keep them all under the cap. So it's like, can you get Connor to sign an 8x12? Do it.
Hawks trying for their first 4-game win streak since February of 2023. Chief will be there. Blackhawks and Devils. And then on Saturday night, it's the first chapter of their centennial season that is going to take place before puck drop at 6 o'clock between the Blackhawks, Austin Matthews, and the Maple Leafs.
Hockey night in Canada, I assume.
Hockey night in Canada. And 2018, Kane and Matthews go back-to-back Sellies to the
I
year.
I was at that one, too.
Okay, you were at that game. Yeah. It'll go 7-6 was the final. It'll go down one of the greatest regular season games
100%.
Ever. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Bedard about it, who was 12 years old at the time, and what he remembers of it, and the Sellies and whatnot, and we get into his Sellies. So we'll have that on the pregame show on Saturday night at 5:30. That is going to do it for this edition of the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000. For Barstool Chief, I'm Pat Boyle. Thank you for listening, and we will catch you next Wednesday on the Hockey Show on ESPN 1000.